Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
Welcome back. It's 12 after the hour. Thanks for hanging out with me. I'm Jim Blasingame, and you're listening to the Small Business Advocate Show, and I'm glad you're here. Very excited about having our good friend Paul Howard back on the show. Paul is a senior fellow with the Manhattan Institute and the director of their Center for Medical Progress. Paul Howard, welcome back to the show.
Jim, thanks for having me back.
It's good to have you back. Always a pleasure to have you and all of your pals there at the Manhattan Institute join me. Paul, as everyone knows by now, we lost a great one last week when Steve Jobs died. We'd known about his illness. We knew he was stricken with pancreatic cancer 6 or 7 years ago. And frankly, based on what we all know, at least anecdotally about pancreatic cancer, he lived a lot longer than most people who get pancreatic cancer live. So, but regardless, he's gone, and we're going to miss him. But you have some thoughts on comparing his life and his contribution to the industry that helped him live a little bit longer.
Right. So Steve Jobs is obviously an incredibly talented technologist and marketer of Apple products. But what struck me was, of course, nothing really stopped him from bringing new products to market except the underlying technology that he was working with. But
right.
He had a vision, and if he wanted to bring something to market, he could bring it to market as soon as he could put it together and they could mass manufacture it in the biotech, in the drug world.
Hold on a second, Paul, because I think that's an important point to make and to land on just for a second. Folks,
sure.
Now think about this. The only thing that would have restricted him from bringing a product to market, anything he came up with, anything he created, for all we know, he created something that was even more off the charts than the things that we know about. The only thing would have been making sure that they belonged to him. In other words, not stealing somebody else's technology. As long as it was legal from a standpoint of ownership, he could do anything he wanted to, at least in America, right, Paul?
Yeah, as long as they could build it, as long as they actually have the technology to make the thing, he's only limited by his imagination. But
right.
No one's standing between him and the market when he wants to bring a new product to market.
Exactly, and so now compare that to the industry that he called on and counted on to save his life when he got sick.
Right. And the FDA is going to stand between you and the market.
Federal Drug Administration.
That's right, the U.S. Food and Drug Administration. And they're going to require very long, very extensive testing and very particular kinds of testing before anyone brings a new drug or medical device to market. And that means that typically between the time someone discovers or invents a new molecule or device, it can take 10 years, hundreds of millions or even billions of dollars to bring that product to market. So even if they discovered
the numbers I've seen, Paul, and I'm not an expert like you are, but the rule of thumb numbers I'd always have thought about was that a new drug takes $1 billion to get to market.
That's about right. When you take into account all of the failures, which means out of every compound a company would test, one out of every 10,000 will become a drug. All the rest are failures, and some fail early, some fail late. But,
right.
but lots of expensive failures. When you total up all of those costs and the opportunity cost, that is that lost time, things you could have done with your money other than
right.
invested in this drug, it costs about $1 billion.
So that's pretty expensive. But we got companies out there who can afford that. But your point, I think one of the points you try to make in your work is that the FDA is more onerous on these companies than they should be. Is that right?
I think that's absolutely right. And I think part of that has to do with, honestly, Congress standing behind them and attacking the agency whenever it's perceived that some drug has a side effect that the agency couldn't predict, and they're blamed, quote-unquote,
right,
drugs like Vioxx or something else, has a side effect that no one could have predicted, but they're going to be attacked, and so the agency is going to be extremely risk-averse and ask for more and more and more data, driving up the cost and time that it takes to bring that new drug to market.
Now, so what are your recommendations?
Well, I think that that really what we should do is shift to a system where we're doing much more testing on the market in real world patients, following them once they're using a new drug, rather than requiring all this information up front.
You're talking human beings being more guinea pigs?
Well, we're already guinea pigs, because you can never predict all of the side effects or all the potential benefits even of a medicine until it's used by hundreds, thousands, or even hundreds of thousands of people, because human beings are different. We're all a little bit different, biochemically different from each other. And so rather than saying to a company, hey, you have to spend 10 years and hundreds of millions of dollars for this drug that might be a cancer saver, might save lives, do basic safety testing, maybe some very early efficacy testing to tell us what the drug does, then get into the hand of patients like Steve Jobs or other people who desperately need it, and just study the heck out of it as doctors and patients use it to understand the benefits and the risks of the medicine, and feed that back into the system. So like Steve Jobs, they put out a product, but they follow it, they track it relentlessly, they're always collecting information, then they're putting out version 2.0 a year after that product came to market. I think that's a better way of doing innovation, because it's iterative and you go back to the drawing board as you learn.
It seems to me, Paul, that what we have here is we have the majority who can wait on highly tested, scrutinized drugs, and a minority of very sick people with maybe some unique circumstances that those drugs quicker. There ought to be a way to strike a balance there, so that my grandson, who's not not sick, gets medicine when he gets a little bit sick that's safe, and I get something like Steve Jobs had, and I need to merge some kind of experimental thing. I have access to that. Is that not a good balance to strike?
I think that that's absolutely right. You hit on a terrific point, which is if you are healthy, you want the FDA to test the living heck out of everything.
That's right.
So by the time you get it, they know everything about it, and you know everything about it. But the reality is, if you're desperately ill, it's a whole different trade-off, and you're going to have a whole different risk profile. And say, no, I want that. There may be some risk you don't know about, but my risk is I've got cancer, and I'm going to die in 6 months.
Hold on a second. I got to take a quick break, folks. When we come back, we're going to talk about this more with our good friend Paul Howard with the Manhattan Institute. And stay with us. We'll be right back.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.